What's up, everyone, and welcome here to the newest edition of Super Powered Pop. Of course, Super Powered Pop is here with you on all of our wonderful social media. You can find Super Powered Pop on Facebook, X, and Instagram, all at Super Powered Pop. That's Super P-O-W-E-R-E-D Pop on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You can also find us by going and searching on our YouTube channel, going to YouTube and searching at Super Powered Pop. So anywhere you go, just look up at Super Powered Pop and you will find us there. I am so happy to be inside of the Parker Banner Kent and Wayne Studios. They are our proud and exclusive studio partner for all the episodes of Super Powered Pop. Whether we're on the road or here in the studio, our studio partner, Parker Banner Kent and Wayne. You can find this amazing comic book and gaming store by going to 21500 Catawba Ave, Suite A in Cornelius, North Carolina. It is just outside of Charlotte. So I am here with you today to speak on the world of Madam Web. And so I am wearing my webbed sweatshirt. I am also wearing, not only do I have the webbed sweatshirt on, but I have, it says, if you can see here, let's see where it is here in the camera. It says right here, Beyond, let's pull that down right here. Nope, there, Beyond Amazing. Everything's backwards on the camera. So it says Beyond Amazing. And inside, if you can see inside of this hood, there's all different pictures of Spider-Man. And of course, I have my Invicta Spider-Man watch on for everybody out there. So this is what I wore when I went to go see the movie Madam Web, because I get all geared up and get all ready to go. I like to dress up for these events and go out there and have some fun. I'm very excited to be here to talk with you about anything and everything on Super Powered Pop inside of the Parker Banner Kent and Wayne Studios. But this is a little bit of not the conversation I wanted to have. Now, did I think that this movie was going to be great? I mean, to be completely honest with you, which I always am, I was concerned. I was concerned because we know that this is, you know, this is Sony. It's a Sony problem, right? Sony makes these movies and they have this belief that, you know, they're going out there and they're making a movie that maybe people are going to understand from the Spider-Verse. But the reality of it all is when Sony makes these movies, and this is no witch hunt to Sony. I'm not here to attack Sony. It's just they brought us Spider-Man. Let's not forget that. In 2002, they brought us the first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire. Fantastic movie, arguably still the best one. Some people would say Spider-Man No Way Home, but one of the best Spider-Man movies out there, in bringing us the original. And in seeing that movie, it meant a lot to me because I've been a Spider-Man fan my entire life, and a Spider-Man and Venom and really the whole Spider-Verse. So to me, anything Spider-Man related always caught my attention. And the fact that they brought us these movies really does mean a lot to me. So I think that, you know, people coming here and automatically going to attack this movie, I want to remember, and I want people to remember, that Sony brought us Spider-Man in the beginning, right? Brought us these movies, brought this character to life, a character that means so very much to us. And so I want to thank Sony for that. I want to thank Sony for bringing this character to life and onto the big screen, because Sony's gotten attacked for the way that they make these movies and the fact that people don't think the movies are that good. But yet, I'm just happy the fact that Spider-Man made it onto the big screen. And of course, yes, you want to make sure that the quality is good. You want to make sure that there is consistency in the effort. And they're not just making movies for the sake of making movies, but they're making movies that really hold true and are good and are strong movies. So, you know, was this Madam Web movie a good movie? It wasn't great. It wasn't great. And, you know, my issue with it is, well, there's a lot of issues that I have with this movie. And it's the fact that the movie really doesn't, and we're going to break it down piece by piece, but the tough part for me with this movie is the fact that, you know, when we're watching this, you're not really getting, the quality of movie that we expect when it comes to anything comic book related now is so high, right? It's so high because of everything that we saw. Now, when Iron Man came out, Marvel Studios put out their first movie from their studios. They didn't know if Iron Man was going to be successful or not. They didn't know if it was going to flop. Robert Downey Jr. was, you know, coming out of having a bunch of different issues that have gone on in his life and things that had happened to him. So, you know, the question was, what was he the right person to cast? Is this movie going to take off? Is it going to make money? And, you know, there was the reality that what if this movie flopped? What if it flopped right out of the gate? Would they even have a Marvel Studios? So, you know, that is something they had to take a chance on, right? So they took a chance to make these movies. And in taking a chance of making these movies, you didn't know what was going to happen. You didn't know what it was going to eventually look like, if it was going to have legs, and if it was going to be something that truly would exist for years and years to come. We didn't know. And Iron Man worked out. Robert Downey Jr., to a lot of people, he is Iron Man. He makes perfect sense. He's synonymous with him. You look in the comic book, you think of Robert Downey Jr., you see Tony Stark, you know, so you look in the comic book, you think of Robert Downey Jr., you look at Robert Downey Jr. and you think he's Tony Stark. You think he's the actual Iron Man. A lot of people look at Tobey Maguire, right? And you thought that's our Spider-Man. And the thing is, making these Spider People movies, in order for Sony to keep control of Spider-Man, they have to continue to present, as far as I understand throughout history, they have to, within a certain amount of time, continue to make movies, right? They have to continue to put product out. And because Sony has this deal with Marvel Studios, and, you know, which is owned by Disney, to share Spider-Man, who is Tom Holland right now, and now that we've seen Andrew Garfield in a Marvel Studios, you know, where Marvel was working with Sony, now that we've seen all the Spider-Men, we've seen Tobey Maguire, we have seen Andrew Garfield, we've seen Tom Holland. So now the question is, if the plans are to work together with Disney throughout, does Sony have any control of when we get to see these Spider People? And if it's just when it's with Marvel, then, you know, obviously they're making these movies to try and keep control of the Spider-Verse and not lose it all back to Disney. They're making movies about other characters. So we're seeing Venom without Spider-Man. We're seeing Madam Web without Spider-Man. We're seeing Kraven the Hunter probably without Spider-Man. And we saw Morbius without Spider-Man. The problem with having a Spider-Verse in Sony without Spider-Man is that Spider-Man is at the center of the Spider-Verse. That's the character we learned about. And so Spider-Man was kind of that jumping off point, right? Spider-Man was the big bang. He was the character in the center of it all, Peter Parker, a.k.a. Spider-Man, which branched us out to all of these villains whose common denominator is Spider-Man, and all these other spider people that came from, you know, obviously they became characters in a world where Spider-Man was our character. Spider-Man was the only one bitten by a spider in the beginning. He was the only character that had the spider powers, the only one that was Spider-anything. And then after a while, we see Spider-Girl, we see Aranya, we see Spider-Woman, and so on and so forth. We see the Scarlet Spider. But there was a time where it was just Spider-Man. The Sinister Six mean nothing without Spider-Man, right? How do we know Kraven the Hunter? How do we know Mysterio and Green Goblin and Hobgoblin? And all of the goblin, you know, variations that came from that, Demogoblin, and now the Golden Goblin, and the Red Goblin, and so on and so forth. The many iterations of the Green Goblin, the many iterations of the Hobgoblin. That all goes back to Spider-Man. Dr. Otto Octavius, Dr. Octopus, Spider-Man. Everything goes back to Spider-Man. J. Jonah Jameson, the Daily Bugle. It's all connected to Spider-Man. So Sony, when they started everything out with 2002, bringing us Tobey Maguire in the first Spider-Man movie, that was before Marvel Studios did their stuff, right? It was before we saw these things from Marvel Studios. So we fell in love with that Spider-Man movie, and we fell in love with the second one. We were concerned about the third one, rightly so, after we saw it. It wasn't as good as the first two. But we got excited for the Spider-Man movies that Sony brought us. And Spider-Man 1 was a huge product. And the second one was a huge product. And then when they tried to reboot it, which I thought was way too premature, and they brought in Andrew Garfield, and it was no offense to him. It was just premature to do a reboot after you had done these three movies. They did a reboot, and they called it The Amazing Spider-Man 1, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which I was in as an extra. And we'll always be eternally grateful to God for that opportunity and how it all came about, from a comic book store in Rochester and my mom to being there having lunch with my grandmother and my ex at the time, and then reaching out and not hearing anything, reaching out the second time, getting chosen to be a part of it, going on set and being a part of the movie. Just really means a lot to me. But when they rebooted it, people were like, okay, we're going to give the first one a shot. But they didn't really like the second one. And that made me sad, not just because I was in it and got to be a part of it, but because I felt bad for Andrew Garfield. I felt bad for everybody that worked on it. So you look at that, and they're building the Sinister Six, but we never got to see it. Then years go by, and Sony has a deal with Marvel. And I actually think the Sony breach happened when I was on set for The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And that's when people found out that, you know, Marvel Studios, Disney, was trying to work with Sony. And then we get Tom Holland, who shows up as his Spider-Man. He shows up as Peter Parker, Spider-Man, for the first time in Captain America Civil War, aka Captain America 3, before he shows up at Spider-Man, you know, Homecoming, and then we get Far From Home, and then we get No Way Home, where all of the Spider-Men that we know from Sony and from the Sony Marvel working together all show up in that movie, which I actually was watching it with my dad last night, and Lord knows how many times I've seen it. I think I saw it three or four times in the movie theater. But that's, you know, kind of the background of it, right? Sony gave us this, and people are so hard on Sony, but without Sony taking a chance on Spider-Man over 20 years ago, over two decades ago, we might not be talking about any of this. But now we come to, what is Sony doing? Because remember, 20th Century Fox, they're making these X-Men movies, and they make a movie called X-Men First Class, but the first class of X-Men was not the first class that was in that movie. So when you call a movie X-Men First Class, somebody like me, who grew up reading the comic books, is going, oh, Beast before he turns blue, Iceman when he looks like a snowman, Angel before Angel turns blue and gets metallic wings, Jean Grey and Cyclops. But no, it ends up being Havoc. It ends up being Mystique and all these other characters, and it doesn't make sense. And you think to yourself, is 20th Century Fox paying any attention to the comic books? And one of the things that I want to dispel, that somebody had a conversation with me before about, is they said, Dan, when they make these comic book movies, they're trying to appeal to everyone. The 1% of the world that actually read the comic books and wants it to stay comically accurate, that's such a small percentage. 1% of the people going to see this movie are the ones that want it to be accurate to the comics. And I disagree, because when these movies flop in theaters, 9 times out of 10, it's movies that are not accurate, right? Madam Web, that we're going to talk about here in a second here, as I build up kind of the backstory of it, Madam Web didn't hold up to who she is. Now, if this was just a good movie, and what this person said to me was true, that 99% of people that go see comic book movies have never read the comic books and don't care, and they just want a good movie. If that was the truth, then yes, they could complain about stuff in this movie, but they wouldn't be complaining about the things we're hearing, about how this isn't accurate, and this isn't accurate, and this doesn't make sense, and why is there no... See, I do agree that you want to try and get new fans, right? People that have never read comic books, you want them to come in. But the baseline of what you're doing, the basis of what you're doing, is the fans. Because look at the comic book material, right? Look at Days of Future Past. People like that movie. Well, Days of Future Past has a run in the comics. So when you look at these X-Men movies and you say to yourself, well, this was, okay, how about Deadpool? What was the biggest problem people had with X-Men Origins Wolverine when we met Deadpool? Is that he didn't look like Deadpool. He didn't resemble Deadpool from the comics. That's not, if the case was 99% of people that saw the movie didn't know who Deadpool was and just wanted to see a good movie, and only 1% are the comic book people, that's not true. Because 1%, no, You're telling me only 1% had a problem with that movie? No. When you hear about X-Men Origins Wolverine, you hear, how do you have the merc with the mouth with his mouth sewn shut? How does that happen? Right? And then Deadpool does so well because what? He's comic book accurate. When Ryan Reynolds takes over and makes Deadpool 1 and 2, he's comic book accurate. Well, who would know comic book accurate? Not the average person, but the person that read the comics. So I firmly disagree that only 1% of the world are the ones that read the comics that go to see the movie. And that 99% are a bunch of people that know absolutely nothing and they just walk into the theater. I think it's the opposite. I think the people that get you jazzed about the movie are the people that have read the comics. And so they bring their friends and say, you got to come see Deadpool, because we know about Deadpool. My buddies wouldn't go see a Deadpool movie if they didn't, 9 times out of 10, if they didn't know anything about him. But if I tell them who he is, what he's about, that he breaks the fourth wall, that he's funny, that it's not your typical superhero, I might get them to come with me. So I think staying comic book accurate, which we're going to talk about today, is not 1% of the people going to theaters. I think it's far greater than that. I do believe in making a movie that you can try to appeal to as many people as you can. But when you're making a movie about source material that's pre-existing, why would you not want to stay true to that? The bare minimum of making any movie about any character that exists is staying true to it. Do you think the Harry Potter fans that read all the books would want to go see Harry Potter if the movies had nothing to do with the books? And the people that were so excited to go were the people that read the books. And somebody like me, who didn't read any of the books and still hasn't read any of the books, no disrespect to Harry Potter, I just haven't. In order to get me to go, you got to talk to me about the character. And I went with a bunch of friends that care about the characters. So I firmly disagree that these movies should not be made at the very basis and the foundation of it to fit exactly who they are to the best that they can of the comic books. You should not make, would you do an autobiography about somebody and follow nothing about their life? You do a Malcolm X movie and it has nothing to do with who Malcolm X was. People would call that out. So how do you make a Deadpool movie and not have it be about Deadpool? How do you make a Madam Web movie and not stay true to her character? When we think of Madam Web, we think of an old woman in a chair. We think of a woman whose hair is gray and she is not able to get out of this chair, right? And she has these incredible powers. And at the same time, she's, you know, kind of just sitting with these powers. She doesn't have her sight. She doesn't have the ability to get up and walk around and do different things. If we look at her backstory, and we'll get into the movie here, but let's look at the backstory. Madam Web is Cassandra Web, elderly woman who suffered from a neuromuscular condition known as myasthenia gravis, which causes muscle degeneration, especially in the eyes. As a result of her condition, she's blind, wearing a blindfold to hide her eyes and spending most of her time seated in a special web-like chair that is also her life support system. So she is stuck to this chair. She doesn't have sight. She doesn't have the ability to get out of this chair, right? She has incredible powers, but she's in this chair. She was introduced in the 1980s in Amazing Spider-Man issue number 210, and she was introduced by Denny O'Neill and John Romita Jr. Now, she was a mutant with the powers of precognition and clairvoyance, as well as telepathy. She encountered Peter Parker for the first time when she aided him in finding the victim of a kidnapping, going on to act as a guide and mentor to Spider-Man over the years. And she psychically learned his identity. She lost that knowledge later on after a near-death experience in a fight with the Juggernaut. The original Madam Web also has a connection to three heroes who have used the name Spider-Woman. She had a relationship with the second Spider-Woman, who's Julia Carpenter. And Julia Carpenter in this Madam Web movie is not known as Julia Carpenter. She's known as Julia Cornwall. And so Julia Cornwall Carpenter, I don't know why I didn't just say Julia Carpenter, but Julia Cornwall Carpenter is one of the characters we do see in this Madam Web movie that was made by Sony here in 2024. So she's connected to Julia Carpenter. She acted as a mentor to the third Spider-Woman, Maddie Franklin, who's also in the movie. And she was the grandmother of the fourth Spider-Woman, Charlotte Witter. the change in the movie is that the version that we see of Dakota Johnson's Madam Web, she has a connection to two of these from the comic book. She has a connection to Julia Cornwall Carpenter, a connection to Maddie Franklin, but she also in this movie has a connection to Aranya, who is the character Anya Corazon. And so this is a difference here of Madam Web having a connection to this other spider person. Now, when we go back and we look at some of the history here, when we look at the Madam Web, she has died and she has gone through different troubles here. She finds her way back, but in the comic books, she does go through a tough time. And, you know, as many characters do, we think they're dead and then they're resurrected. Now, when we look at Julia Cornwall Carpenter, she becomes Madam Web. So when we go back and look at Julia Carpenter, who in this movie was played by Sydney Sweeney and called Julia Cornwall, Julia Carpenter was introduced in 1985 in Marvel Superhero Secret Wars as a resident of the city of Denver, Colorado, who is transported to the artificial planet known as Battleworld when its creator, the Beyonder, stole Denver to make up part of its new world. As you know, Battleworld is made up of pieces of different worlds, and he pitted Marvel's greatest heroes and villains against each other in combat. Now, she was already active as Spider-Woman by the time she was in Secret Wars, with her backstory revealed as being a government agent who was given a special formula that caused her to develop powers akin to those of Spider-Man, along with the added power be able to create psychic telekinetic web, her version of Spidey's web shooter. So she developed her powers from a special formula, and being a government agent, given a special formula that developed the powers similar to Spider-Man, along with having psychic telekinetic web. Now, that psychic telekinetic web we do see in Madam Web's movie from Julia Cornwall, aka Julia Carpenter. We do see this in a future kind of, you know, when we see her in the future. Now, we never really see this in the movie materialize, but in the future, Tahar Rahim's character, Ezekiel Sims, sees her use this telekinetic webbing, which we never actually see put into use, but we do get to see a glimpse of it in the future. We don't see any of it in the present tense. Now, she switched sides after meeting Spider-Man from being on the bad side to being on the good side. Now, when the participants of Secret Wars return to Earth, Julia Carpenter, still in the guise of Spider-Woman, joined the government mutant hunting team known as Freedom Force, alongside former members of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, including Blob, Pyro, Avalanche, Destiny, and their leader, Mystique. So she was a villain and an enemy of the X-Men for a time in the comics. And then she switched sides back to when the Freedom Force was in a fight with the Avengers and the X-Men. She went on to join the West Coast Avengers and then served as on Iron Man's Force Works team, which I have a comic book of Force Works from back when I was a kid. So she did quit being a superhero to raise her daughter as a single mother. And then she returned under the name Arachne as, you know, so no longer Spider-Woman, but still a spider person. And Arachne was her name. So we do have this history with Julia Carpenter and the connection there. When we look at Madam Web with her cinematic debut, the issue now is that in this movie, which I saw right when the day it came out, is that we see Madam Web and she is substantially younger. The whole reality that, you know, she has this disease, right? She has this thing that affects her health, you know, is that it's different here, right? Because her mom finds out about this and her mom goes to Peru and tries to find a cure from the spiders that are in Peru. And then there's all these spider people. So they know, so she finds out, hey, your daughter has myasthenia gravis. So she goes while pregnant to Peru to try and find a cure, and the cure comes from the spider. So she gets bit by this spider, while she has Cassandra in her womb, speaking of Cassandra's mom, and while she's in the womb, she gets bit by the spider, and this spider is supposed to give her these abilities, right? So she's trying to cure her daughter, and it doesn't end up curing her daughter, but it gives her these abilities. And here's the thing. In the comic book, she's a mutant. Disney and Marvel Studios under Disney owns the mutants. They bought them back from 20th Century Fox. They made Miss Marvel into a mutant instead of an Inhuman, but they own the rights to the mutants and the Inhumans. So that made no sense. It also makes no sense to have this backstory of Madame Web and connecting her to being bit by a spider, like Spider-Man was bit by a spider, because everybody who's in the spider world has to be bit by a spider. Instead of just calling her a mutant when you have the rights and the ownership of that, but then you look at Sony and say, but they don't, because Sony doesn't, but Marvel does, because Marvel got the rights of the mutants from 20th Century Fox, but Sony doesn't. Sony just has the rights of the spider backstory. But if they have the rights of the Spider-Verse, then don't they have the right to call her a mutant? If they've always had the rights of not over 900 characters in the Spider-Verse, then wouldn't Sony have the right to tell the backstory of Madame Web? And here's the question. If you can't tell the correct backstory of a character, why would you even make a movie? They've made two Venom movies, and this is no offense to anybody on the Venom movies at all. I don't severely dislike these movies. I like the first one better than the second one. But here's my thing with the Venom movies. Venom becomes Venom because the symbiote that first connects to Spider-Man finds out all of Spider-Man's stories, all of his history, replicates his powers, and then Eddie Brock gets the symbiote after the symbiote has replicated the powers of Spider-Man and has all of Spider-Man's memories and everything. So the whole point of this is J. Jonah Jameson's son, John Jameson, goes to the moon, comes back with the symbiote, doesn't know he has the symbiote. The symbiote gets loose. It attaches to Spider-Man at a time where Spider-Man is kind of down in the dumps. It loves Spider-Man. It loves Peter Parker's powers and obviously connects to him with the powers. And because of where Spider-Man is currently at, depressed and down, it can take advantage of him because Spider-Man is not in a state of strong confidence and strength. So it loves his abilities, and at the same time, the symbiote loves the fact that it can be in the driver's seat and that Peter Parker's going to just love the increased power that that he has with the symbiote, that he's not going to really think about the fact that the symbiote is trying to take control. And then eventually we have that scene where he goes to the church and the bell, because sound and fire bother the symbiote that, you know, becomes Venom. So we know that the bell causes the symbiote to detach from Spider-Man. And as it detaches from Spider-Man, it drips down onto Eddie Brock, forming Venom. Well, you can't tell that story for whatever reason, because, I mean, and this is what I don't get. Sony can tell that story. They have told the story. In the original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man 3, they had Venom played by Topher Grace. And they had him with the spider on his chest. So they could tell the story. But now they're not telling that story. So we see two Venom movies with no spider on his chest. Then we have a post-credits scene of him knowing who Spider-Man is and licking the screen. But we don't know how he knows that. And Carnage is supposed to be born of Venom. And Venom has all of the information of Spider-Man. So Carnage is supposed to be able to have this information. But Carnage has no connection to Peter Parker or Spider-Man in these last two Sony films. Then they make Morbius, who has no connection to Spider-Man. And Morbius, in the post-credit scene where it makes no sense, because the Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness spell, the fixing of this spell is supposed to send everybody who knows who Peter Parker is back to their own universe, right? Their own universe, their own planet. And for some odd reason, everybody goes back except for Vulture, who's played by Michael Keaton. And that made no sense, because Vulture talked to Scorpion in Spider-Man Homecoming in jail, or the person that becomes Scorpion, and now he's not in that world. So you have all this confusion going on with Sony. You have a Venom without any connection to Peter Parker, but then he does have a connection to Peter Parker, but we don't know how he has a connection, and he didn't absorb the powers of Peter Parker, and he doesn't have the spider on him. So it's a symbiote that has no connection to Peter Parker that makes no sense to the backstory. Then you have Madame Web, and we see her in a younger version, and her backstory has changed. So that makes no sense. Then you have Kraven the Hunter's movie that's supposed to be coming out this year, where it looks like he's going to get superpowers from having a drop of lion's blood go into his blood, which doesn't make any sense because Kraven was a good hunter in the comics, but he wasn't a super-powered, super villain hunter that had some type of abilities put into his genes. So, and then with Morbius could have been a good movie, but again, there's no Spider-Man. So it doesn't really make sense why Morbius would want to seek out the Vulture and why Morbius is now putting a team together. Now Morbius is going to be a part of the Sinister Six. So there's all of this confusion, and forgive me for kind of, you know, throwing us all over the place, but I've thrown us all over the place because that's where Sony has thrown us. Sony has put us in this world where they had the rights to Spider-Man and the Spider-Verse. And they were making movies that were pretty good, right? Especially the first couple Spider-Men. And I didn't think Andrew Garfield was a bad Spider-Man. So I don't think any of them are bad. I think that some of the scripts could have been better. I think some of the storytelling could have been better. But to make these Spider-Verse movies and to have no connection to Spider-Man is really throwing everything off because you're changing the backstories of characters. And again, why are people having a problem with this? Because it's more than 1%. Anybody who tells you that only 1% of the comic book fans are the ones that go to the movies and the other 99% are just people that don't know anything and they just want to shut their brain off and go to a good movie, that's not true. Because the people that are telling you they're not a fan of this movie, that are probably deterring people from going to see the movie, are people that know the backstory. Madame Web's backstory in the movie by Sony changed. Kraven the Hunter's looks like it's going to change. Venom's changed. And Spider-Man is the glue that binds them all together. How do you have Madame Web without Spider-Man? She is the one that helps Spider-Man. She helps spider people. She can link in this web to all of the spider enhanced people. So how do you make her this way and not have her connect to Spider-Man? Now, the characters that she does connect with in this movie that Dakota Johnson plays Madame Web in this 2024 release, she connects, like I mentioned, to Julia Carpenter, who in this movie is called Julia Cornwall. And you can also refer to her as Julia Cornwall Carpenter, but it's Sydney Sweeney. Sydney Sweeney's character, Julia Carpenter from Earth 616, which is the normal Earth that we're supposed to know here, which is that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is in Earth 616, and that Marvel Comics and those origin stories of these characters started in Earth 616 for Captain America and Hulk and Iron Man and Spider-Man and so on and so forth. She's a woman of many talents. Like I said, she's a government agent. She's a mother. She's a superhero. She was born and raised in Los Angeles. Her life took a turn when she married Larry Carpenter and had a daughter named Rachel. Her marriage ended in divorce, leading Julia to focus on raising her daughter alone. She gained her powers through a government experiment that I mentioned, where they accidentally injected Julia with a serum made from a mix of spider venom and exotic plant extracts, which gave Julia powers similar to Spider-Man. And she found herself in superhero conflicts and secret wars, as I mentioned, as well as Freedom Force and Iron Man's Force Works. She faced off against adversaries like Death Web and encountered personal challenges, including the loss of her powers and subsequent paralysis. Gaining her new powers again, she took on the moniker Arachne that I had mentioned before. So her code names are Spider-Woman and Arachne. Julia Cornwall Carpenter's nicknames are Bug Lady, Spider Cryptic, Spider Girl, and Spider Lady, to take a look at this. So, beyond that, she's 5'9", strawberry blonde hair, blue eyes is how she's supposed to look. And we see that in Sydney Sweeney's character. She was mutated. She is considered a human mutate. So there's mutants in Marvel and there's mutates. Mutant is born with the mutant X gene. A mutate is a human being that's not born with a mutant X gene, but is mutated by something that happens to them, like this injection of spider venom and exotic plant extracts. So she was killed by Dr. Doom with the Beyonder's power and revived in Battle World. So she has died. She has come back to life. And beyond that, when we take a look at her history, she's the daughter of Walter and Elizabeth Cornwall. She met and married her college sweetheart, Larry Carpenter, which I had mentioned before. And then she teamed up with Iron Man when she was stalked by a trio of high-tech bounty hunters known as the Seekers. They came to collect the bounty, which had been placed on her head. She was wanted by the U.S. government after she helped the Avengers. Iron Man decided to help her with her daughter's situation. They battled the bounty hunters, but it ended when she decided to surrender to the U.S. government. And she, like we said, she walked away from the superhero business and her powers were restored in Civil War. When we look at that, her powers restored. She returned using the code name Arachne. And during the Superhuman Civil War, she registered under the Superhuman Registration Act, which is something we've already seen play out in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Sokovia Accords, so to speak. And she and Wonder Man aided Miss Marvel in the training of superheroes. And so when we look at this, there's a bunch of different pieces of her history here. I do want to go to her connection to Madame Web and Spider Island. So she was supposed to prevent Peter Parker from killing Kraven, explaining to Peter that he was in the center of a moral web that would be destroyed if he killed Kraven, and advising him that this murder, however justified, would turn him into a ruthless destroyer. After burying Kane and Madame Web in a Potter's Field, she explained her new purpose to Spider-Man and Aranya before teleporting away. She gave her Arachne costume to Anya Corazon, who is also in this movie, and so she could become the newly christened Spider Girl. So she did slip into a coma for a certain period of time as well. And so we do know that she has a connection to Madame Web. She becomes a new Madame Web, speaking of Julia Carpenter, aka Spider Woman. Now, her appearance in a future scene that we see from Ezekiel, and we also see in connection with Madame Web in the 2014 movie that we're here to talk about, we do see that her costume is pretty comic book accurate, and she actually gets to have the spider on her chest before Venom does in the Sony Pictures Spider-Verse, which is sad to see that one of them hasn't, one of them doesn't. Why don't they both have it? But the other part of it is, as comic book accurate as her costume is, her eyes are exposed, which makes no sense. Because whenever we see any type of spider person, they cover their face completely so that nobody can see their eyes or their nose, or, you know, they might lift up for their mouth to do that upside down kiss, but that's it. Another character that we do see that does have a connection to Madame Web in the comics is Maddie Franklin of Earth 616. She's a teenager who gains powers after participating in a mystical gathering of five, assuming the mantle of Spider Woman. She filled in for Spider-Man's absence before adopting her own crime-fighting persona. So her life took a dark turn when she became a victim of drug exploitation. She was rescued by Jessica Jones and Jessica Drew. Maddie faced challenges navigating her superhero life by dealing with her involvement in events like Civil War and being part of the Loners, a superhero support group. Tragically, during the Grim Hunt, she was sacrificed in a ritual by the Kravinoff family, but was resurrected as a clone by the Jackal. Her second chance at life was short-lived as she sacrificed herself to protect others from carrion zombies, ultimately crumbling to dust. So, taking a look at her affiliations here, she's single in the comic books, stands at 5'8", black hair, blue eyes, and her origin is human, magic-based mutate, powers activated via taking part in the Gathering of Five ritual, and to take a look at what this Gathering of Five ritual actually means, I'm going to bring us into this here. So Arachne, let's see here, Arcane Ritual, go with me on this for a minute. The Gathering of Five, which gave the powers through magic to Maddie Franklin, Spider-Woman, is an arcane ritual with five arcane relics, where the people were granted either immense power or they paid the ultimate price. So, you know, the real rolling of the dice, a 50-50 shot that you're either going to become superhuman or you could die. So taking a look at this, it seems like, you know, that's kind of like the scary movies that come out, right? They get involved with these weird relics and it's either going to kill them or give them some type of power. Now, the relics, when brought together in the ritual performed, allowed the five who possessed them to be blessed or cursed with power, knowledge, immortality, insanity, and death. The catch was that those powers didn't seem what they were at first. What first seemed madness was in fact knowledge. What seemed power was madness, and death seemed like immortality. One recorded Gathering of Five was brought together by Norman Osborn when he sought power. So this is who received it. Maddie Franklin received power. Norman Osborn received insanity. Morris Maxwell received knowledge. Gregory Hurd received death. And Cassandra Webb received immortality. So Madam Webb was also a part of this ritual. So what seemed like death for Madam Webb was immortality. What seemed like insanity, what seemed like madness was knowledge, and so on and so forth. So Maddie Franklin got power, Cassandra Webb got immortality. And so that's the Gathering of Five. That's how she got her powers, right? They get these relics together, they do this Gathering of Five, and this is how she gets her powers. So speaking of Maddie Franklin's version of Spider-Woman. Now, beyond that, let's take a look at this. When the real Spider-Man returned, Maddie fought Charlotte Witter, who is the granddaughter of Madame Webb in the comics, became known as Spider-Woman with the blessing of Jessica Drew, going through a number of different costumes before eventually settling on a black and red bodysuit. Maddie's admiration for Spider-Man developed into an intense crush, and after Mary Jane's apparent death, she kissed Spider-Man when he was performing CPR on her following a fight with Charlotte Witter. Peter rejected her advances on account of the significant age difference between them and because he still believed Mary Jane was alive. Maddie was eventually sent to a boarding school where she fought several new villains and made a friend in Cheryl Lansing. Now, looking at her connection to Jessica Jones, who we saw in live action on Netflix, and that is now considered Marvel Cinematic Universe canon, and it is now on Disney Plus. Jessica Jones, as well as Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Punisher, and Daredevil. Taking a look at Jessica Jones' connection to Maddie Franklin's Spider-Woman, Maddie wasn't seen for a while, eventually went missing. She broke into Jessica Jones' apartment in a drugged stupor, fled. Investigating more, Jessica discovered Maddie was being harvested for drugs by her boyfriend and kept sedated. Apparently, Maddie was being used as a source for mutant growth hormone, a power-inducing drug that requires a superpowered individual's genetic material. With the help of Jessica Drew, Jessica Jones brought Maddie back to the safety of her uncle. Now, you heard me say that she joined the group The Loners. That was a group in Los Angeles, also a place that Julia Cornwall Carpenter was connected to. So looking at two Spider-Women, the Loners, she got involved in breaking up an MGH ring with two other members, which led Ricochet to later break into a Fujikawa lab, resulting in Lightspeed being wounded by Hollow, who is known as Penance. The group was confronted by a woman leading armored guards and Delilah. They had come to reclaim Hollow. The matter was settled peacefully. Maddie was frustrated about allowing the bad guys to leave. And that's what we look at. The Jackal brought her and Madam Web back to life as clones in the comic books. Maddie later encountered Silk, who is another spider person. So Maddie's, you know, kind of history here. She has died like Madam Web. She has come back to life. And she does have these powers, but her powers come from the Gathering of Five and a magic mutate. So that's her powers. So we have a magic mutate. We have an injection from the government, human mutate for Julia Cornwall Carpenter. And the third spider person that we see in this Madam Web 2024 movie is Aranya Corazon. Aranya Corazon from Earth 616 becomes Aranya, and a Hispanic spider person known as Spider Girl, Aranya, and the Amazing Spider Girl, also known as nicknames Ana, Aranita, as well as Spider Girly and Spider Lady. So those are her connections here. She is single in the comics. She is 5'3", and she has brown eyes, brown hair, stylized spider tattoo on her right arm as well. She is a more recent character. She came out in Amazing Fantasy Volume 2, Number 1, in June of 2004 as Aranya Corazon, as Aranya in Amazing Fantasy Volume 2, Number 5, and was a part of the Young Allies in October 2010 as Spider-Girl, Young Allies Volume 2, Issue Number 5. So looking at the history of Aranya Corazon, a.k.a. Aranya, she was a teenage gymnast from Brooklyn whose father, Gilberto, was an investigative reporter. She moved to Mexico when she was very young, but she returned with her father to the United States after her mother was killed. So this is some of the backstory of Aranya, a.k.a. Aranya Corazon. In an average first day at school, she saw her friend Lynn being bullied by an older boy. Aranya defended her friend, which sparked a fight. A teacher broke the conflict, but that night the two went down to a bridge in a nearby park to resume their battle, and Aranya discovered a stranger being attacked by a strange group. The Sisterhood of the Wasp attempted to kill the man, but Aranya helped. Aranya leaped in the way of the killing blow. This site was allegedly a sacred spot. The man, Miguel Lagar, was the sorcerer of the Spider Society, a secret group dating back for hundreds of years. Recognized that Aranya had the ability to become the new hunter of the Spider Society, he transferred some of his power to her to save her life. And as Lagar's partner, Aranya visited the Web Corps headquarters, a shell company used to hide the Spider Society's actions, and became suddenly involved in the war against the Wasps. When Lagar got caught in a bad situation, Web Corps enlisted Aranya to rescue him. During the confrontation, Aranya was shot in her arm. The wound became a spider-shaped metallic tattoo. At Web Corps, she was informed of her birthright role as a chosen initiate for the Spider Society. And we kind of see the Spider Society in the Madam Web movie, but they're in the wilderness of Peru. So a little bit different here. And as part of Aranya's training, Lagar abandoned her in the Mexican desert. After she was attacked by coyotes, she learned she had gained enhanced strength and agility and the ability to manifest a protective blue exoskeleton. This allowed her to knock out several of the beasts. She then fully joined the Spider Society as their hunter, and her cover was being an intern of Web Corps. Being given the opportunity to choose a new given name for herself, she rebaptized herself as Aranya after her mother's maiden name. Since the society asked Aranya not to tell her father of the recent events, he became suspicious of his daughter. He demanded to meet her superior at Web Corps, and Lagar met him to calm him down. Having her father's approval, Aranya joined her co-workers from Web Corps and on a mission to prevent the Sisterhood of the Wasp from empowering their own hunter. So this is, like I said, a more recent story. She is connected to Miss Marvel, so I want to take a look at here. She was part of the Registered Heroes during the Civil War, though she never took part in any of the battles, and she was still considered a trainee, although Carol brought her along to observe as Julia Carpenter was taken in and separated from her daughter, which had Aranya concerned she was on the wrong side. And so taking a look at this, after the battle, she became something of a sidekick to Miss Marvel during the time. Let's take a look at this. So in her connection with Julia Carpenter, she was also captured by the Puppet Master alongside other female superhumans to be used and sold as mind-controlled sex slaves, but was freed from his control by Miss Marvel after being unable to attack Carol due to seeing her as a mother figure. So that's definitely a dark side of Marvel here when you're looking at sex slavery in the comic books here. She was hunted by the Kravinoff family, who was already connected to other spider people I mentioned. And they were looking at killing all the spiders and to resurrect Kraven. So she worked with Arachne, Julia Cornwall Carpenter, the former Spider-Woman. She worked with Arachne and Madame Web, and where they were all captured, and Maddie Franklin was sacrificed. So in the comic books, they are all connected. So Dakota Johnson's Cassandra Webb, a.k.a. Madame Web, Isabella Merced's Anya Corazon, a.k.a. Aranya, Julia Cornwall Carpenter, who is Julia Cornwall in this Madame Web movie, played by Sydney Sweeney, as well as Celeste O'Connor's Maddie Franklin, who becomes another version of Spider-Woman, are connected in the comic books. But this whole Tahar Rahim Ezekiel Sims side of things, who's also in the comic books, their connection in this movie is that Ezekiel sees into the future, and obviously we're going to provide spoilers here. Ezekiel sees into the future. He sees that these young human beings become spider-enhanced human beings, and that Julia Cornwall Carpenter, Anya Corazon, and Maddie Franklin all become these spider people, and they end up killing him. So he's the villain of the movie because he can see into the future, and because he stole the spider from Peru, because he stole that spider, he is cursed. And with this curse from the Spider Society, he is meant to die. And he is going to die at the hands of spider-enhanced people. And so the whole movie is about him being with Cassandra Webb's mom in the forest, jungles, whatever you want to call it, of Peru. And so he's in this wilderness. He's supposed to be there to help her. She's pregnant. He ends up shooting her. Shooting Cassandra Webb's mother while she's pregnant with her, ends up shooting her, which could end up killing her and her baby, but Cassandra Webb doesn't die. Her mom dies. So this guy is just gross in the reality of things. And in this Madame Webb movie, Ezekiel Sims is just terrible, right? His greed and his desire to have this power of a spider person causes him to shoot a bunch of people that are defenseless on this expedition and to shoot a pregnant woman. Cassandra is born and she has no idea of any of her powers, and her powers end up coming to fruition in this movie when she is in her 30s. So there's that. And then as her powers start to come to fruition, she realizes that, you know, she's been connected to all of these girls, Julia, Maddie, and Anya. She doesn't know why. And she starts to realize after a while that, you know, she really just, as somebody who doesn't care about anybody, she doesn't even care about a picture that a kid gives her because she saved this kid's mother. And she doesn't even care about this little girl's picture. She goes from not caring about that little girl to caring about three teenagers that she doesn't know, and she protects them from Ezekiel. She's trying to keep them from being killed by him. And the entire movie is, he has a curse. He's going to get killed by these three women when they become spider-enhanced people. He's trying to kill these three girls before they become spider-enhanced, and Madame Web steps in his path to stop him from killing these three girls. So the whole movie is Ezekiel's trying to stay alive, and Cassandra Webb decides to keep the girls alive and doesn't want Ezekiel to succeed. It's a story that is not connected to a greater threat. It's a very kind of small story. I think it could have been told differently. I mean, I guess when we break this all down, the hard thing about this movie is no connection to Spider-Man. Now, We do meet Mary Parker. She is pregnant. The balloon pops, so we can't hear her say Peter. She says he won't stop leaping around in there, but anybody that knows the comic books knows that Peter did not become spider enhanced until he was bitten by a spider when he was in high school. So him jumping around in there is just kind of a foreshadowing that he's going to be Spider-Man, but we don't know that he's going to be Spider-Man. So we, you know, we meet Mary Parker. We meet her brother, Ben Parker, who becomes Uncle Ben. We hear that he's dating somebody, but we never meet May. So we, you know, we know that the whole, and then she's talking about like, oh, you know, he's saying he loves being an uncle. You know, you get to be around the kids, but you have none of the responsibility. And she kind of, you know, knows that he's, you know, speaking of Cassandra Webb, AKA Madam Webb, she knows he's going to have plenty of responsibility because with great power comes great responsibility, and he's going to have to take care of Peter. So there's this foreshadowing that's kind of fun. There's moments where scenes look like the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies. So there are pieces that look connected back that give me nostalgia and make me have hope for this movie. And there's the connection to Peter Parker, which gives me hope for this as well. The issues that I have with the movie itself is Madam Web, her backstory's changed. When you're going to make a movie about a character from the comic books or from a book or whatever, if you're going to make a movie about a character, you don't change their backstory. That makes absolutely no sense. If somebody made a movie about my life and said that I wasn't born in Syracuse and I wasn't born to Deb and Ralph and I didn't, you know, go to this school and have this education and this wasn't my religion and this and that, then you're making a movie about me and you're changing my origin, which means the movie's not really about me. So why is the movie about me if it's not? And that's the whole thing with Madam Web. How is this a Madam Web movie when it's not about Madam Web? It's about a version of Madam Web that you've created. And so here you are in, you know, in the wild, finding a wild spider. And then Kraven the Hunter, he's going to be in the wild with lion's blood. And here's Morbius, who's in the wild with bat's blood. So unless Oscorp is experimenting with these bats or these lions or these spiders, how are these spiders giving people superhuman abilities, right? And the whole spider society piece of it, that's not described. I would have rather Madam Web start off going back and telling a backstory, right? How we learn the backstories of Wakanda when they paint the picture for us, right? We learn the backstories of these different pieces, right? We learn the backstory of the Infinity Stones. And when we're talking with the Collector in Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, I think that, you know, telling this back, I think the movie should have started with the Spider Society. And what it should have started with the Spider Society, these spider enhanced people, all connected by the web of fate or the web of fate and destiny or whatever you want to call it. And so you have this. So the movie, this is, so Madam Web, in my opinion, could have started with the Spider Society, describing, you know, how Patrick Stewart, when he played Professor X, how he described to us about mutations, about mutants ever so many years. And then we get to see like this DNA and different things happening. If you bring us through this life of the Spider Society and you bring us through this web of fate and destiny or whatever you want to call this web, the Spider Society being the introduction of the Madam Web movie, and the Spider Society being spider-enhanced people that are chosen. How are they chosen? Well, through this web of fate and destiny, and this web of fate and destiny expands throughout the multiverse, and you give this backstory of this, and then you tell the story of, you have Cassandra's mom finding out that she's going to be born with myasthenia gravis, and we know that this is going to probably take her sight, take her ability to walk, and so on and so forth, and that she's going to spend her life in a chair, and she's going to have to essentially be, you know, unable to walk about and do different things. When we find this out about her, we can find this as Cassandra's mom is pregnant. We find out about the story of all of this, right? And we find out how Cassandra is connected to the Spider Society and the web of fate and destiny. How is she already an enhanced person? Be it you call her a mutant or you call her whatever, but tell the backstory of the Spider Society, show us the web of fate and destiny, and then have us learn about her through her mom, learn about the myasthenia gravis, and not take her to a jungle to be bit by a spider, but that she has this power that's inside of her, right? And that she starts to learn this power. She sees things. You know, we have a little girl who sees a bus and she sees a crash. And then all of a sudden she blinks and she looks and the bus is there again. And she sees it again and the bus is there again. And then she grows up a little bit older and she's on a date with some guy and they're at a restaurant and she sees somebody walk in with a gun and she sees them hold the gun up and somebody gets shot and she sees somebody fighting with the gunman. Then all of a sudden she blinks and she's back and she sees the guy walk in again. And she starts to realize at different parts in her life, as a little girl, as a teenager, in college, as an adult, she starts to realize like, hey, there's something going on with me. I keep getting these premonitions. As she gets older, the power gets stronger until the point where she can't ignore the power. And it's happening more frequently in her life. And as it happens more frequently, she reaches out to somebody. And eventually, she somehow, you know, studies something in the library, or she figures out something that brings her back, or that brings her to this Spider Society. Or maybe somebody in the Spider Society, she keeps seeing them in what she thinks is a dream. And they keep calling her to something, calling her to something. So then she goes out, she meets with them, she finds out about her powers, which we do see that in this movie, Madame Web. We find out about her powers. They train her. They help her to focus. And then she starts to use these powers. She meets Spider-Man while using, you know, these powers. And we see her kind of, you know, go through this process of her powers becoming stronger. Her body becomes weaker. So we see this increase in her power as we see a decrease in her physical body. And she starts to hone in on this from the Spider Society. She connects with the web of fate and destiny because we've already seen the introduction through the cartoon or CGI world of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Since we've already seen the Spider-Verse there, and we've seen the Spider-Verse in Spider-Man No Way Home, and we're learning about the multiverse in Marvel Studios movies, because it's all been introduced to us, it's not going to be hard for people who have seen those movies to be open to the web of fate and destiny. So now when she goes into the web of fate and destiny, how cool would this be in this Madame Web movie that I would have made, is that as she goes into the web of fate and destiny, she goes into this web, we see this pitch black, the web starts to shoot out. And as this psychic web is shooting out, this telepathic web is shooting out, it shoots out and it stops and we see this clip. And it's Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. And we see another one. And that web connects to Andrew Garfield. And this one connects to Tom Holland. And then this one connects to Miles Morales. And we start to see all of these connections of the spider people that we've already met. And we know that these connections are here. In having these connections, she feels, she telepathically, psychically connects to these three women. She realizes that they're in danger. And she goes to assist them. So some of this movie is not dead in the water. Helping the three that eventually become spider people, helping those three young women, that doesn't have to be gone. Connecting with the Spider Society and the web of fate and destiny and being trained, that can go be gone into more, but doesn't have to be gone. Her connection to her mother doesn't have to be gone. But you don't change her backstory. Because even at the end of this movie, she's blinded by the firework. But if she can see everything, how is she blinded by that? So she's blinded by the firework. She falls into the water. And how is she paralyzed? Is she paralyzed because the myasthenia gravis that they said she was going to have as a child was not fixed by the spider bite in the movie? I mean, if the whole point of getting bit by the spider was preventing her daughter from having myasthenia gravis, then what creates the fact that myasthenia gravis is still in her body and it doesn't work? What happens? Does the spider bite not work when she goes into the water and she's blinded by the firework? You know, does something fall on her to take? I mean, we don't have a scene where she's laying there and it's like, I can't feel my legs. You know, I don't know what's going on with this. I mean, the problem with some movies is that they describe something too many times and then they don't describe something else enough. And I think this movie failed to describe a lot of things enough. And the fact of like, I want to make sure my daughter's not paralyzed, to now my daughter at the end of the movie is paralyzed. How did she get paralyzed? Why is she paralyzed? Right? And it was that easy to blind her. And when she fell into the water, were her eyes not already closed? And it just seems in like the firework, I mean, did it hit her in the water? I mean, it's just when I go back and I think about the movie, it's just strange that she gathers all these powers, yet she still ends up having myasthenia gravis. And even though they changed her origin story is still the same. So she got the powers from the spider bite and not from being a mutant, which is different. But then she becomes stricken to a chair because she still has this disease. So it just feels like if you're not going to tell the origin story in its entirety, why are you telling half of it? Why don't you just tell the whole thing? I mean, there's a lot that gets lost here. And at the end of it, you know, all of a sudden she's in all red and she's wearing these red glasses and they connect us back to the comic book, but other parts of the movie don't. And so at the end of the movie, it's kind of like this payoff to say to comic book fans, like, hey, in the last 3 minutes of the movie, here's Madame Web that looks like Madame Web. She's in front of this big window. She's got the big red glasses on. She's sitting in the chair. But it isn't her that we know through the movie. It's not, it doesn't stay true to her. So when we see it at the end, it's kind of like, they just rushed and threw it in there. Now, they said that this movie did reshoots. And, you know, here's my thing with reshoots. When you make a movie, and obviously, you know, movies are filmed out of order, right? When I did my trailer for the Spider-Man movie that I wrote, I was filming things out of order, right? Because today is when my dad could play my Dr. Kurt Connors piece. This is the day that I can use, at the time, my girlfriend to be Mary Jane Watson. This is the time that I have allotted to me to bring in my buddy Mark Walczyk, who's going to play Eddie Brock, who's going to turn into Venom. So, you know, things are not shot in order. But when you do reshoots, you can fall into losing continuity in your movie. And when you lose continuity in your movie, it's, I mean, basically, you say to yourself, when you do these reshoots, does somebody sit down and watch this movie, or do they just edit it and put it together and hope for the best? Because if they sat and they watched the movie, one of my biggest issues with this movie is the fact that the lips do not move when people are speaking. And I mean, with Ezekiel Sims, it is an egregious party foul. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. And it's not his fault. He didn't edit it, but it's, And again, I'm not here to witch hunt Sony. I'm not here to witch hunt the editor. I'm saying I take my work very seriously. And I can literally, in this moment that I'm talking about this, go back to the exact video that I was making in college at Marywood University and how many times I played it over and over and over again, because if it was a half of a millisecond off, it didn't look right. And when you're making a movie, and you're spending this money and you're getting these actors together that I can imagine are not cheap. I don't think Dakota Johnson is cheap. I wouldn't imagine that Sydney Sweeney, I think people are saying, you know, she's on the up and up. So I don't think that she's necessarily cheap. You know, I've seen Isabella Merced and other things. So I know that she's not necessarily cheap. Mike Epps is only in the movie for a short amount of time, but I would imagine he's not cheap. He's been around for a while. Adam Scott's not cheap. So, you know, and also on top of that, you know, I would imagine that, you know, Emma Roberts isn't cheap either. She's been in a bunch of movies and she's been around for a long time. So when you're putting this film together and you're spending the money, then spend the money to edit it properly. And when Ezekiel's talking and his mouth isn't moving or it's moving to different words, I mean, that's something that is so easily fixable that you can watch. I shouldn't say easily fixable because I know how many hours it can take to edit, but it's something that needs to be fixed. Or you know when you watch the Sci-Fi Channel and you would expect the Sci-Fi Channel's graphics to not be great? You expect them to look cheesy. You expect the, you know, maybe the voiceovers don't, maybe when the voice comes in, it doesn't look right. Not from a major motion picture from Sony and Columbia. Not something that you see on the big screen that you're paying $13 to $15 to see. And so that was a huge part of the movie that was really hard to not see. Because I'm sitting in the movie theater going, am I crazy? Like, I know I just saw that. Then I try to forget about it. Then you see it a second time, a third time. And then you see other people doing movie reviews talking about the same thing. And it just really bothered me that that was a part of it. So I think this Madam Web movie has moments where it could be good. And I don't like that people attack Dakota Johnson. I think it's really, to me, it's very hypocritical where people feel that they can attack certain actors or certain actresses, but not others. And I don't expect them to attack certain people the way that Dakota Johnson was attacked. You know, people were calling her boring. You know, oh my gosh, you know, like her trailer was like a, you know, a lullaby, right? And I don't think that that's fair to her, right? And it's really, I mean, would you want somebody to say that about you? I don't like your voice. So I'm going to tell everybody to not listen to your show because I don't like your voice. You know, I don't fault Dakota Johnson for this movie. I don't think she did a terrible job acting. I don't fault the spider women. You know, I don't fault Isabella Merced. I don't fault Sydney Sweeney. I don't fault Celeste O'Connor. I don't fault Adam Scott or Mike Epps or Emma Roberts. I don't fault Tahar Rahim. You know, everybody's looking at the fact, you know, people talking about the fact that he's choke slamming women and they're trying to make this a man versus woman movie. It's not a man versus woman movie. It was a man who was trying to stay alive. Right. But it's like, can you not make movies anymore where a man tries to kill a woman or a woman tries to kill a man? I mean, it's just when you go to see a movie, okay, this man was trying to save his own life. If someone is a murderer, it shouldn't be unsettling to you how they're murdering a man or a woman. It should be unsettling to you that they're murdering anybody. And so I think that, you know, a lot of people are bringing into these movies racism and prejudice and sexism and all this stuff, where it's completely just unnecessary to have these conversations. Ezekiel Sims is trying to save his own life. They chose to have female characters that are connected to Madam Web in the comics. They chose to have these characters connected to her in the movie. And they chose to have her protect them from this guy. Now, if it was a woman that was choke slamming, would you think it was bad? Or would you just think it's a woman-on-woman crime, so it doesn't matter how she kills them? See, the reality of it all is this movie should be about the character. And it wasn't about Madam Web as much as it should be. And like I said, they could have started this movie out with a voiceover, with the Spider Society, with the Web of Fate and Destiny, saying, you think you know the story of Peter Parker. You think that he was accidentally bitten by a spider. But as we've come to know, that's not the case. Spider people are predestined. Boom. Opening credits. In the opening credits, showing the web, connecting Dakota Johnson's name to Celeste's name, to you know, Isabel's name, to Sydney's name, because they're going to be connected in the movie, right? Connect, connect, connect. So we see this web of fate and destiny. We see the spider people and little shadows of like CGI stuff just jumping. Then we go to the story. We go back to the beginning of time when the spider people were, you know, first coming to be. And we learn about the history of the spider people and that, you know, this has been going on for eons and eons. And then we learn about the history of Cassandra Webb. We learn about her mom knowing that she's going to have myasthenia gravis. And then we see her as, like I said, as a young child having these premonitions, then as a teenager, then in college, Then when she gets out of college, she realizes that her powers are getting stronger. She tells her friends about them. She loses some friends because of it. She becomes a loner. She becomes an outsider. Nobody will listen to her. Then all of a sudden, she's connected back to the Spider Society, either because they reached out to her, because they felt the connection with her through the Web of Fate and Destiny, or she's having premonitions of them through the Web of Fate and Destiny. They come together, they train her, and after they train her, she meets these girls and she protects these girls from a threat. And then the movie has this premonition of what these girls could become. She says something to them like, you have no idea what's going to come up. You have no idea the power of your story or who you're going to be. And then in the second Madame Web, we get to see Madame Web using her powers from the beginning, because it's no longer an origin movie. So in Madame Web 2, we're seeing Dakota Johnson older, using her powers, blind, sitting in the chair. And as she's using her powers, she's using them on the women that we've already met. And those actresses come back. And now we get to see all of their origin stories as they have become these characters. And they could be flashbacks into how they became spider people, because I would like the second movie to be the action of these three spider women having their three stories and how these stories connect back to Madame Web, and Madame Web is helping them. You don't have to put Spider-Man or Peter Parker into it at all. But if you have the origin story the way I just told it, I think it's a better sell. And by the end of the movie, if she's with these girls and she knows what they're going to become, then as they become these things in the second movie, we're watching them in action. We're watching them become these pieces, right? She's connected to all of them like she is in the comics. We see that they become Spider-Woman and Spider-Woman and Aranya. And so maybe one of them changes her name to Arachne. Maybe when the two Spider-Women, when Maddie and Julia meet each other, maybe, you know, they say, who are you? And she says, I'm Spider-Woman. Or no, when they become these characters, she says, I'm Spider-Woman. The other one goes, well, that was my name. So then one of them might go Spider-Girl, or she might say, okay, you know what? I'll be Arachne. I like that name better anyways. Ha, ha, ha. They put a little levity in the film. And then Anya says, I'm going to be Aranya. And so we get to watch their story. And the second Madame Web is the story of these three spider women. We're not even dealing with Peter Parker. We're not even worried about Peter Parker. We're not dealing with the background of Marvel Studios and the connection to Peter Parker and Spider-Man. And now Sony is telling the story of three enhanced spider people that are all female, that have never been seen on screen before. And now we have Spider-Man over here, and Sony has this awesome, awesome opportunity with Madame Web to connect to any spider-enhanced person, to the Scarlet Spider, to literally anybody in the world, Kane, so on and so forth, in any piece of the Spider-Verse. And now that we have Madame Web's origin story set, we've watched her grow into her powers. We've learned about her training. We've learned that, and as her powers got stronger, her myasthenia gravis affected her more. So as she got stronger, her body got weaker. So now we understand fully that her powers are strong, but her powers couldn't save her. And this is why she's in the chair. That the disease she had as a child is a disease that's with her. And that it's this sadness that we feel for the character of Madame Web, that we can be so moved by her incredible powers, but that her powers, however great they are, still can't physically keep her sight and still can't physically keep her from being restricted to this chair. So, because what do people do? People connect emotionally. They buy emotionally. If there's no reason to be connected to Madame Web emotionally in the Madame Web movie that was made by Sony, but in the movie that I would make, you see her great power and you think to yourself, why? She has this great power, but she cannot save her own body. She's not going to die from myasthenia gravis, but it's going to cripple her physically. It's going to be this sad story that she can see everything, but she can't see anything. She can see into the web of fate and destiny. She can see through telepathy and being a psychic and a clairvoyant, but she can't see the tree right in front of her. So there's this sadness we feel for the character. And she can even cry in the middle of this when she says to the Spider Society, why would God give me such a power? Why would I have such a power? And yet be so weak. And we feel for her. We see her cry. We see her pain. See, that's the thing they failed to do in this Madame Web movie. We don't feel bad. We don't know the girls well enough to feel bad for them. We didn't see their backstory. We just heard about it. If you saw a backstory of one of these girls leaving the house when her dad, if we see her dad get deported, grabbed by a bunch of officials and taken out into the hallway and he just disappears, and we see her sitting at home at night stealing food so she can eat, if we saw those moments, we would feel bad for Anya Corazon. If we saw the moments of Sydney Sweeney and sitting at the dinner table and they're talking to the other children at the dinner table, but they're not talking to her when she wants to tell them about her day and they go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they go to the younger kid and they're talking to the younger kid, but they're ignoring her. We see why she wants to run away. When we see Maddie's family and they're never home. And in the beginning, she loves it because she can't get grounded and she can eat whatever she wants and drink whatever she wants. And she has these big time parties at her parents' mansion. But it leaves her feeling alone. And no matter how many people are in the mansion, she always wakes up by herself. She's always in paradise by herself. Now, these short 2 to 3 minute, 5 minute moments in the movie emotionally connect us to feel for our protagonists. Cassandra having great power with great responsibility, but not having physical strength, and that her powers that she has can't cure the ills that she suffers, that she is meant to help everyone, but she can't fully help herself heal from myasthenia gravis, that there is no cure in her psychic or telepathic or clairvoyant ability, that someone with such fantastic abilities still can't cure her own illness. She cries, we feel for her. That would have changed the entire story, because you have to be emotionally connected to the characters. If you're not emotionally connected to the characters, you don't care if they die. You don't care how they're affected. We heard about all of their lives from them. We might have seen flashbacks. We might have seen moments. We learn a little bit about Cassandra Webb's mom, but we don't feel for her because she's an emotionless character. We don't feel for the girls because we don't see their plight. We hear about it. And some people don't believe if they don't see. And in a movie, you're supposed to see because it's visual. So I think making a Madame Web movie with all the things that I stated, plus this emotional connection, changes the whole story. And by the end, and then she could say to these girls, you have no idea what God has planned for you. You have no idea the abilities that you will have. And she just smiles. And then the movie goes like through her eye. And then we go back in the end credits to the web of fate and destiny, like we had in the intro. Then in the second movie, we have Madame Web sitting in her chair, looking out her window, talking to each of the girls. And we see each of them fighting in their own story. And so now we can flashback to how they gain their powers, but now we're seeing Madame Web in action the first second of the second Madame Web movie. We see all these spider women. We see what they're fighting, and they come together to fight in unison against the big bad, right? But we see each of their stories as we go. But we don't have to origin story them, right? Maybe at the end of the Madame Web movie, we can origin story the girls. Because she knows what they become. There's a reason why she's protecting all of them. They realize that. They're all orphans. They stay with her. I'm totally fine with that being in the movie that I saw and having them stay with her in the movie that I would make. But in the second movie, after we just spent the origin time in really getting to know the girls and getting to know Cassandra Webb, do I want to origin all the girls in the second one? No, it feels like it's too much. So in the second movie, I think that we can have a short time with the emergence of the powers of these three women that were predetermined from the Web of Fate and Destiny and the Spider Society to become spider people. And that Madam Web takes off in this movie in like an immediate scene, right? Where the three of them are working together. And they're working together on the ground level, and then something big happens, and they have to all work together, and they all need each other. And maybe in that movie, we temporarily lose Madam Web, so Julia Cornwall Carpenter has to become Madam Web for a short time, which in the comics, she becomes Madam Web. Or you can make this Madam Web movie that I told you how I would do it, and after you make it, you can spin off each of these characters. I think you'd have to do another movie with all of them together instead of separating them all. I think having them together would be important because they were brought together by Madam Web. I think we have to still show the Web of Fate and Destiny in this case. And then it, maybe at the end of the second one, Peter Parker or Miles Morales shows up and says, hey, I heard you guys, I heard you guys are doing some good things. Or, you know, did somebody call for me? I think at the end of Madam Web 2, if I was doing the movie, the end credit scene would be her like this. You know, you just see her using her powers, just like holding on to her mind. And all of a sudden, Peter comes through the window and he said, you called for me? And she smirks. And she's got those, you know, her red glasses on, and she smirks and the movie ends. And then we don't know what the next threat's going to be and how that's going to work out. But if the whole point of Sony is that they have control of 900 plus characters in the Spider-Verse, and Madam Web is a direct connection to everybody in the Spider-Verse, she is at the center of the Spider-Verse. If she is at the center of the Spider-Verse and completely connected to the Web of Fate and Destiny, you have to do a better job of telling your story. And Sony, Marvel, if you'd like to tell her story, call me up. Send me an email. Shoot a message. I'd be more than happy to tell a story and to show you what I would do with Madam Web. With that being said, this has been an edition of Superpowered Pop with Dan Tortora. Our episodes are available to you on the DTBM Network, which stands for Dan Tortora Broadcast Media, dtbmnetwork.podbean.com for the audio. For the video, you can find us on YouTube at Superpowered Pop. Make sure to hit subscribe and click the notification bell. And you can also find us here on Facebook, X, and Instagram at Superpowered Pop. For now, I ask you to have a wonderful day. And from the Parker Banner Kent and Wayne Studios, I implore you to go to Parker Banner Kent and Wayne Comics and Games, which is located just outside of Charlotte in Cornelius, North Carolina, on 21500 Catawba Ave in Suite A. You will find a fantastic team led by Matt Milburn. I implore you to go out there. I'm telling you, folks, if you're in the North Carolina area, it's worth going if it's down the street or an hour away. I will jump on a plane from wherever I am to go to this comic book shop. And I will actually wait to buy comic books from Matt than go anywhere else. That's why they're our studio partner, because it's not just a comic book shop. It's a special place, and it's a place that I always look forward to going to. It's your neighborhood comic book shop for those that are in the neighborhood, and it's your neighborhood comic book shop for those that might be 1,000 miles away. And when somebody can pull that off, there's something truly special about who they are and the heart that they have. I always appreciate my conversations with Matt, which is why when I have conversations with you, it's brought to you by Matt Milburn's wonderful location, Parker, Banner, Kent, and Wayne. For short, PBKW, and you can find them at PBKW as well as at PBKW_comics on Instagram, on X, the former Twitter, at PBKW, and you can look up Parker, Banner, Kent, and Wayne on Facebook, and you can also look it up on any of your search engines to find out more information about them. From the Parker, Banner, Kent, and Wayne studios, this is Superpowered Pop, our conversation on Madam Web, and what I would do to take this movie and make it even better, even more connected, without even having to use Peter Parker until an end credit scene of my second Madam Web movie. That was all here, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. Feel free to comment below, and remember that your true hero lies within.